Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. This show takes center stage, front and center, 9 o'clock on the West Coast. Push away the Denver omelets, the country potatoes, and the sourdough toast. If you're on the East, you might be getting ready for a hot dog with a little deli mustard on it, onions and relish. It's Sports Talk Saturdays, hosted by Bruce Kessinger live in Oakland, Scott Morgenroth in South Florida, yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing it in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. This show goes by quick. Catch the archive, tell your buddies and friends, get it on social media, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I give it over to these guys, and I man the board, let me lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Bruce, you could take center stage and give it over to your counterpart there. Scott, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And there is a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah. And I'm fine now that I pushed away that Denver omelet. Considering how bad they play, I don't even want anything from Denver. I can be reached at holyroller91978@gmail.com or on Facebook. Oh, take it away, Scott.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Glad to be on with you and Marco again. Okay. But if you want to find me on Twitter, @TribuneSouth, the @ Tribune, T-R-I-B-U-N-E, South, S-O-U-T-H. And most importantly, please subscribe to the South Florida Tribune YouTube channel, South Florida Tribune YouTube channel. Then you get all of our broadcasts with Mark, and hopefully you'll get on eventually down the line as well. We have a lot of different shows that appear on the South Florida Tribune YouTube channel. Go to YouTube.com, look for South Florida Tribune, hit subscribe. Glad to be back on, Bruce. Enjoy working with you, buddy.
Oh, thank you very much. The feeling's mutual. Oh, we got.
Yeah,
to,
I have to tell you.
Well,
I'm not in front of the stadium. I'm actually at home right now, so it is a very different situation. When I'm on the road, anything can happen. When I'm sitting in my living room next to my birthday wife, Candy, then it's a beautiful thing, buddy.
And happy birthday to the wife. And speaking of on the road, your Dolphins are coming here to go against the San Francisco 49ers in what should be a nice marquee matchup. You are
going to
have foul weather conditions. What do you think is going to happen?
Are you going to the game?
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Well, what do I think the conditions? I don't know. What is the weather conditions out there? You're in that neck of the woods.
Oh, it should be raining. It's been like that. I think it's going to be sloppy.
Oh, that doesn't matter. Dolphins always go ahead and play in the rain. Remember, talking South Florida, buddy. I mean, come on. You know, we live in places where they have hurricanes. No, we're not talking Miami Hurricanes, although they've done good for me this year. But the Dolphins are used to playing, so it shouldn't be a big deal. I think it should be a pretty good matchup. Certainly be a test for sure. We'll find out if they're playoff bound, and they're going to have a great test against the 49ers without a doubt. We'll find out how well Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Tua acclimate to. So I think it'll be a pretty good football game. Looking forward to watching that. Really am.
Indeed. I'm looking forward to that game. I guess it's the marquee game of the week, although there's a lot that have, you know, that have implications going on. I don't know what your team's health is like. Who do you have out if you have any major players?
I think the Dolphins are fairly healthy. I think the really big story in these parts really is whether or not they can go ahead and play against a marquee name with a really excellent defense. You're going to find out what Tua is really all about tomorrow. He really will. He's had a good year. I know there's talk is in the MVP conversation. I think that's a little premature. But for a guy that's never been able to stay healthy for an entire year, he's got a fresh start under Mike McDaniel. Darrell Bevell is his offensive coordinator. He's got some weapons, got a good, solid running game and a good passing game. So the main thing with Tua, you have to play in, well, you're not going to play in 17, but if he hits 15 because he was banged up a little earlier, we'll see how the guy does. So, like I said, you know, they're used to playing in rainy weather. Now, when it gets interesting for the fish is when they have to play in the snow and the ice and the cold, then we're going to find out what they're made out of. But dolphins are an animal meant to swim, and these dolphins can swim. You know, go to Hard Rock, Joe Robbie Stadium, you'll find out it does tend to get a little bit rainy in those parts. So I'm looking forward to watching the game. I think for the most part they're pretty healthy. I like reading the transcripts every single day that we get from the Dolphins media part. So, you know, to take a look at who's doing what. It's like I said, you know, Tua is going to have a huge test against an excellent defense.
Yes, indeed. I'm actually very excited about this game. The implications, you know, you guys running in there with Buffalo and the Jets still hanging in, all of a sudden that division, you didn't think so at the start, was going to be very competitive. And I think it looks to me like the New England Patriots are fading, and they probably – I don't see Belichick getting those guys back into the hunt for a couple of years. I noticed his record since Brady left has only been 500. And I was very disappointed in what they did with Buffalo the last time. That looked like that offense just looked plain weak. So what do you think about that? I don't see the Belichick magic going on anymore.
Well, can I ask you a question? Are you surprised that it's not going on without Tom Brady there?
In a way, yeah. I am. Maybe I overrated Belichick or underrated Tom Brady. I shouldn't be surprised, should I?
when they went apart, something had to really give, right, Bruce? I mean, we're going to find out exactly whether or not Tom Brady guided them to the Super Bowl, or we're going to find out whether Belichick was a mastermind. Well, if you really want to go ahead and put it all into perspective, then what you really do is you go out there and say to yourself that, to me, Tom Brady won a Super Bowl first. So, I think that when you put it in perspective, to me, I'm not surprised. I mean, Tom Brady's certainly having a difficult year without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's in retirement, let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Brady, I mean, he's having a tough year because, you know, Tom Brady's right now having a tough year because I don't think the running attack is doing what they've got to really do in the first place. You know, Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles are different coaches. I think they let a lot of good players get away, and Tom and Rob Gronkowski there. But as far as the Patriots are concerned, the biggest Achilles heel that they're having is that Belichick goes out there and makes the biggest. So, you know, I think what you have is you have that monster between Joe Judge and Matt Patricia calling plays. Your quarterback has regressed, right? So that's what you're dealing with, Bruce. You're dealing with a situation where Josh McDaniels left, and Belichick's biggest problem was he did not anoint an offensive coordinator is what he did, and then he had Beavis and Butthead running the offense. Well, that's what he
did. I agree. That's a bad combination, those two.
The only time that Beavis and Butthead were any good was when I was watching them on TV, and it was one of the most entertaining comedy shows I've ever seen. Now, I have to tell you, though, one of my guys who appears on Fire Up Michigan, his name is Jeremy Valright, okay? And you know what he calls Matt Patricia? You ready?
Go.
Matt Patricia.
Oh.
Matt Patricia. Oh, yeah. No, I'm telling you, Jeremy, these are good people. You want to talk about the most animated podcaster I have? I found this guy from another network and brought him over to my side for a little while. This guy's unbelievable. Matt Patricia, you know, you talk about blind leading the blind. That's what you have in New England. Byron Leftwich will still be a head candidate at some point, although I don't know if he'll get a job this year or not, or whether he has to go back to college. So I think to answer your question about the Belichick thing, yeah, he's been a 500 coach. Tom Brady left because he didn't feel like he had the talent around him in the first place. He really, really didn't. And he proved the point to Belichick. I can win without you. You need me more than I need you. Well, how do you argue the results? Did you ever expect the Patriots to be playing Mac Jones and then Bailey Zappi this year? And I tell you, I saw Zappi play in college. I really, really, really did. To me, I think he could be the heir apparent to Mac Jones if they let him go. I've even heard talk that maybe Brady would get considered going back to New England for a final curtain call. I don't know. I'll see it to believe it.
Yeah, well, you're sort of enlightening me because I just understood that Brady's contract was up, and I figured they weren't going to re-sign him for a lot of money because they considered him too old. We have Frank from Germantown, Pennsylvania. Guess what he's saying? No one's beating the Eagles, and the Niners are no match. Dolphins have not been relevant in years. Washington beat the Eagles. They got
That was a good loss for the Eagles. They let me tell you, the Washington Commanders are playing some really, really good football these days.
They are.
They really are.
They are.
So, you know, happened to the Eagles was they lost the game. They did. You know, you don't have you know, only one team that's ever gone undefeated and won a championship. It's, lo and behold, the Miami Dolphins down here. So, otherwise, the Patriots came close, but they lost the final game to the New York Giants. So, the color you have is, I find it hard to be against the Eagles. They added Ndamukong Suh on a two-year contract in an attempt to try to bolster that defense a little bit. I like what they're doing on offense, and they have a good young coach. So I wouldn't bet against them. Like, we'll see how deep they go into the playoffs, but this is one guy here in Philadelphia that makes a whole lot of sense. So I have no problem with them. We'll just see whether or not the Eagles can go deeper into the postseason and go and see where it goes. I don't know if there's really a clear-cut favorite in any NFC, do you?
No, I would. If anything, I would. And this is not a hometown bias. I would say the Niners, but you know, I think Garoppolo is. You know, it really depends on him and the injury situation. And they've bolstered with McCaffrey. He's been good. The defense is awesome. I wouldn't go. I would say you're right. I don't have. There is no clear cut favorite. And if you're looking here, I do. You're right. I like the way Washington's playing. I like Heineke. He plays with a chip on his shoulder. And wow, he's a quarterback at Old Dominion. I've never even heard Old Dominion having a football player out there in the pros. Chris Gatling for basketball. That's the only other one I know out of Old Dominion who was a pro.
I've got the standings here, okay? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bruce. I got the standings, okay? Let's talk about the Washington Commanders, okay? They're 4-1 in their last five games. They're on a three-game winning streak. The Eagles are 10-1 with 909 winning percentage, closest thing to being undefeated. Yeah. The Packers gave a tough game, but the Eagles emerged. So I don't trust the Dallas Cowboys, to be honest with you. I think the Giants are fading a little. They had a good year. They played better than expectations. And here's another thing. I don't trust the Minnesota Vikings either, losing by 37 to the Cowboys. Of course, the Lions, Packers, and Bears are a non-factor. The Buccaneers are 5-6. So they get in, well, they can't go in as a 500 season because you play 17 these days, but they're leading the best of the worst division in the NFC South. And then you have the San Francisco 49ers, 7-4. The Arizona Cardinals are going to be looking for a new coach, so you don't have to worry about that. And, of course, Seattle Seahawks, we'll see how far they can go under Geno Smith. So is there really any kind of competition? I mean, again, I don't trust the Vikings and the Cowboys. That's my issue. It's a matter of trust. So when I break down everything, to me it comes down to the Philadelphia Eagles and the 49ers, and that's about it. I just don't see anything there that really pops my eye until the Cowboys prove that they can go deeper in the playoffs instead of laying eggs somewhere along the way. This caller, to me, I think he's got it right.
I'm in agreement with you as far as certainly I don't trust Kirk Cousins. Again, there's quarterbacks that are sort of playing, I guess, over their head here. Kirk Cousins is one of them, and I consider Geno Smith, again, like I say, there's an issue of trust here in the Giants with Saquon Barkley, but I'm still not sold on Daniel Jones. I see them somewhat as paper tigers. I think Washington takes them out tomorrow. I like the way that Washington's playing, like you said. Good coach, all of that, considering all the turmoil that's going on in the front office. I like Washington to possibly get a wild card. Dallas, you're right. Again, lack of trust there. So, we'll see. I like that call there. Nothing's going to happen out of the South as far as I'm concerned. And right. I am looking. I think that the Niners, when they get Seattle, are going to win again. Seattle's certainly going to take the woeful Rams out this week. So it's going to be interesting there. Yeah.
Bruce, understand the Washington Commanders, my friend, are on house money. That's what they are. They're on house money. You're right. You talked about the adversity that surrounded the team with Ron Rivera's had a tough year having to be the face of the franchise on and off the field. We all know about the Dan Snyder situation is a cotton picking mess. But yet 7-5, 583, another win tomorrow. I mean, you know, here, well, let's go ahead. Let's have a little fun with this whole thing. Let's talk about the wild card right now, if you were to think about it. We'll look at it now. Seven teams make it. You have the Eagles, Vikings, 49ers, and Bucks that they started tomorrow. Okay, then you have the Cowboys would be a wild card team, the Giants, and then you have the Commanders. Well, there you go. So the Washington would get in if the playoffs started tomorrow. Now, if they win tomorrow, then they would overtake the Giants. And then what do you have left? Well, I already talked about it, so it's not worth it. So they'd be in the playoffs tomorrow. So, yeah, they're on house money right now. They are. Taylor Heineke, to me, is a guy that nobody expected anything. Well, thought Carson Wentz would go in there, and I don't know what's going to happen with Carson Wentz a year from now, and I even think about it. So it's not applicable.
I do think that the Commanders are going to make a move to get into that wild card situation. And
they're already in it, Bruce, is what I'm telling you, my friend. They're already in it if it started tomorrow. So, but yeah, could they obviously move up a little? I mean, think about it. You got Dallas right now, 8-3 is your top wild card team, and the Commanders are 7-5. So what you have basically is the Cowboys have played one fewer game. That'll all work itself after the bye week. But still, you know, the Washington, if playoffs were to start tomorrow, would be in.
Yep, indeed. Well, we have, you knew this was going to come up. Joe from Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Jackass Deshaun playing tomorrow returns to the scene of the crime. They should beat the Texans. I mean, do you think Deshaun Watson is going to feel a ton of pressure there? I don't think that there's a ton of pressure because the Texans are so bad. You might as well just run the ball and let him throw a few times just to get him out of the rusty situation. And I know that some of the victims egregious maneuvers are going to be at the game. The Browns are going to win that game, and then you see what happens for the rest of the season. I think it's too late for Cleveland to even make a move. But what do you think about all this? I mean, we saw it coming. We knew they were coming back against Texas.
If you want to talk about a situation that couldn't have been staged more perfectly, this is it.
Yeah.
When this guy got an 11-game suspension with a bye week, they figured, you know what, we have a great storyline here on December 4th against the Texans. And let me tell you, Bruce, okay, if there's ever a time when you're looking for storylines to hype a meaningless game, this is it.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson returning to Texas. I don't care if a lot of his victims are there or not. It doesn't matter. Is he going to be under pressure? Absolutely not. No way.
No.
I mean, let's face it, the Browns as an organization is under pressure more than Watson. They gave him $230 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Of course, $5 million feel bad. That is in the form of a suspension. So, yeah, and they front-loaded this contract where it wouldn't take too big. No, not at all. Now, bear in mind, though, as far as the Houston Texans are concerned, they're going to be drafting a quarterback in the 2023 draft. They had to see what Davis Mills had to offer, which was nothing. So, no, I don't think so. I think Deshaun Watson can go out there and be very loose. He's only going to play there once every 4 years unless the scheduling is maneuvered where he does more often. No, I think Deshaun can go out there. We know he's a talented quarterback. He certainly made some bad decisions off the field. We all know that. The worst kept secret on the planet. So, I think go out there, play football, like you say, get the rust out of there. But, man, the way the NFL set this thing up in terms of scheduling, if anything, you know what?
It's a money move.
The Texans are going to sell some tickets. They're going to sell a lot of them. They may fill the place. And, you know, the only thing that annoys me about the Texans, and Mark and I talked about this on Fire Up earlier in the week, was they decided to get rid of David Culley last year, who was 4-13, and he got Lovie Smith. My God, let's just tell you how well the Texans are doing. They got rid of a guy that was 4-13, okay, and now you have the Texans who are 1-9-1 with a 1.36 winning percentage. This is probably the closest thing to an exhibition game that I have ever seen in the regular season. And, you know, we'll have to see how Lovie Smith makes out. That's the reality of the whole thing. But I think it's going to be – I don't plan to watch it. I mean, although you never know, I'll be in a sports bar watching the Lions and the Jaguars. All my other half is watching the Bears – the Packers game against the Bears.
Right. I don't think any coach that inherited the Texans over the last 2 years, they fired Bill O'Brien, was going to be able to do anything with that team. And Bill O'Brien wasn't doing anything with that team either after you traded DeAndre Hopkins.
Well, hold on, Bruce. He did a lot more with that team than most people think that he did. The biggest mistake that Bill O'Brien made was when he tried to wear the GM cap and got rid of DeAndre Hopkins. That, to me, was a bad
move. Yeah, DeAndre Hopkins was a killer.
Well, sure it was, but Bill O'Brien left the Texans with a 52-48 mark, and he ended up going ahead and taking him to the playoffs ever since then when Nick Caserio came there and the dysfunction in the front office and the owner passing away. It certainly has been a bad situation. So, and, of course, Watson didn't help matters any with that situation where massage debacle that took place at, where he didn't want to play there anymore. But I don't have any respect for Watson. You know, he ended up going to the Cleveland Browns because they were a desperate organization. That's what they were, and they were willing to pay the money, all that guaranteed money, which messes up the infrastructure of how quarterbacks are going to be paid later on. That could be for another show. But still, I think Deshaun Watson is going to Houston is to have a good time and rout the team that got rid of him. But in the end, I think the Houston Texans are going to have the last laugh because they acquired a lot of draft capital is what they did. And I believe that they can fix that situation within about 2 or 3 years. I mean, think about it this year. I mean, you have the Rams winning the Super Bowl, and now the Rams, where are they at here in the standings, okay? They're in last place, 3-8. Matthew Stafford practically done for the year anyhow. So teams can rise and fall in the NFL very quickly.
Indeed. I do like the running back that Houston has there, Pierce, but you're right, there's much else. You think Matt Stafford should retire?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I think he should not play the rest of the year.
Oh, I'm in agreement with that. But you got, he had 3 concussions this year. You got your ring. I don't know how long his contract is with the Rams. I would try to step away. They have a crack at getting a decent quarterback in the draft, too, and I would think that they might want to do it, considering what they have now and the fact that Stafford is in the latter stages of his career. If I were in the Rams organization, I would draft a quarterback.
Well, you make some valid points. Do I think he should retire? Not if he feels he's playing at a high level. If he feels, and of course his wife Kelly will probably have a lot of input and probably say, hey, Matt, you know, I think you've had a great run, okay, so maybe he will take that into consideration and be the best father he can. If he feels that he's playing at a high level and he can continue to play, fine. I think they should definitely shut him down this year for sure because it's a lost season anyways, and why do anything that jeopardizes well-being for a team which is definitely not going to make the playoffs at 3-8. So you shut him down, and then you see what's what, and I think – if he decides to retire, maybe you have to look at the fact that what are they going to surround him with next year? You know, you brought in Von Miller. He moved on to Buffalo, Aaron Donald. And maybe part of it might have to do is whether Sean McVay wants to continue to coach too. Now, if McVay were to step aside, then I'd tell Stafford, yeah, retire and get out of there while you can, because then you know, McVay literally recruited him to the Rams. So there's a lot of things, and he endured a lot of coaching situations when he was with the Lions, and I am glad he got the ring, but I don't know. I think it's a TBD. If McVay comes back and then they improve the team and he feels he can play at a high level, you stay. If you feel you've accomplished anything, you don't want to get hurt anymore, then at that point he'll know when to hang it up. And I'm sure his wife Kelly, like any good spouse, will definitely go out there and be protective of him.
Yeah, I agree with that.
To answer your question right now, I say no, But that's a very fluid answer to your question called a TBD. We'll see where it all plays out.
Indeed. Let's see, another that Philadelphia-Tennessee matchup is also very intriguing to me. But to me, that's a low-scoring game. I think 5.5 is too much, so I would go with Tennessee on the points. But you know, Derrick Henry keeps you in a game, but you don't score many points. So it's all about their defense and the running game. You think they stand a chance in this one?
Well, here, you talk about the Titans' offensive production, okay? They've scored 209 points, and they've given up 205. A +4 differential is a very, very small number. So, yeah, Derrick Henry does keep them in games. I think it'll be a good football game, one of the best football games out there. I would probably, again, let's just find out where the game is being played. I believe the game is being played at Philadelphia.
Yes,
so
it is.
Right. So I believe and I see the 4.5-point spread. I see no reason why the Eagles can't win by as many as 7 to 10 points, knowing it's in Philadelphia.
Ooh, okay. All right. We disagree on that one. Let's see what other matchups we got going on here that are validity.
I think Ndamukong Suh, if he's playing well enough, might force Ryan Tannehill to have a little headache medicine now that he's getting into gear a little bit. So, yeah, it's okay to differ. I just feel like when you're playing in Philadelphia and you're playing in a much higher level, this is one of those point spreads that depends on where they're playing the football game, and they're playing it in Philadelphia. So I would easily think the Eagles should probably win at least by about 7.
Okay, very good. There's other ones. What do you think about the Chargers and the Raiders in Vegas? The Raiders coming off a 2-game winning streak. Tough call on that. There's a lot of flack going at Derek Carr's way, and I see a few bad decisions here. But really, they're being forced to outscore other teams because that defense is just plain no good. I've noticed it. Severe inability to tackle anybody on that team. And the only guy I think that's any good there on that side of the ball is Max Crosby. I think the Chargers, but the Chargers can score, the Raiders can score, but I think the Chargers take that. You?
No, actually, believe it or not, Bruce, I'm going the Raiders' direction. And I'll tell you why. There's a couple reasons. Devontae Adams is starting to play a lot better. He had 71 receptions for 999 yards and 10 touchdowns. If Carr and Devontae Adams can get in sync, that could be good. But here's the wild card. Josh Jacobs will be a free agent at the end of the year. 216 carries for 1,159 yards and 9 touchdowns. If you get Carr in sync with Josh Jacobs and Devontae Adams riding a 2-game winning streak, then for some crazy reason, the Raiders, who we laughed at earlier in the year as a train wreck, may end up winning yet another game. I'm going to go with the Raiders. I don't know why it's a tough one.
Okay, I think it's going to be a shootout, in my opinion. And yeah, Josh Jacobs is great. That he ripped off that run to beat Seattle last week. Again, they had to outscore the Seahawks. So it was 30. They gave up 34 points in that game.
But Bruce, let me ask you a question. Okay, if you're running back or any player playing on a contract here, don't you think for some reason that gives you a bit more motivation to get more cabbage so you can cash that bad boy, direct deposit, whatever? As long as you stay away from crypto, you're okay. But at least the cash won't be crap. So you got crap versus crypto, take the point. And if you're getting a lot of it, like Josh Jacobs will get, okay, then I believe you've got a recipe for success, and you may be looking at a franchise. In fact, if Mark Davis can afford to do it, you know him better than I do, but no, this will be a pretty interesting football game.
My curiosity has been piqued on that one. And let's see, as you said, you didn't trust the Minnesota Vikings, and they've got the New York Jets. I love Robert Saleh. He's certainly, along with Pete Carroll, one of my candidates for coach of the year. And like I say, I don't trust Kirk Cousins, and you've got a defensive coach who I think is kind of a defensive wizard in the Soleil. I see the Jets maybe taking that game.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I the last time I read some information on Kirk Cousins, he was like 60 wins and 60 losses in the regular season. and has one great agent and accountant because he'd collect a lot of guaranteed money to be a mediocre team. So, yeah, you know what? For some crazy reason, I like the Jets to win this one, too. I just don't trust the Vikings. I do. You can say what you want. They beat Buffalo 1 week, and then they get hammered by the Cowboys. So I'm not sure where to go with the Vikings, but I'll tell you, I do like Robert Saleh. He actually is from Dearborn, Michigan. Well, I was hoping the Lions would get, but he saw a better opportunity in New York, and he's done a great job. Now, what's their quarterback situation will look like? Well, you know, he's talking about wanting to bring in Zach Wilson at one point when he gets his head straight, but Mike White had a good game, and that quarterback situation is up in the air depending on the success that Mike has. So I think the best thing actually the Jets have going for them is this game's going to be played indoors. So I like the Jets. I don't know why. It's just again, I'm actually riding the Jets. In fact, here's a little nugget for you. They haven't been to the playoffs in 12 years. So when you haven't been to the playoffs in 12 years, to me, Robert Saleh, that's a lot of the motivation why he is sitting down with Zach Wilson. They need to get that playoff gorilla off their back. They really do. And, you know, think about what White did last week, went 22 of 28 for 315 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 31-10 victory over Chicago. So how do you not go ahead and ride that, you know? So
yeah, be an excellent game. And I thought it was after the game, of course, in hindsight, of what a great decision by the coach to go ahead with Mike White. I like the attitude that Saleh has. He looks very driven. I think he motivates players well. I think he gets along with players very well. And Minnesota's got a lot of weapons, but I think a good defense mops the floor with Kirk Cousins. So, yeah, the Jets on that one for sure.
Well, let me tell you this, Robert Saleh, okay, Bruce. Have you looked at any of his press conferences at all and the way he handles the New York media? Have you looked at any of those?
No, I have not seen them.
Well, let me tell you, for a rookie, for a relatively new coach, okay, I think he's in his second year now, I believe.
Yeah,
this
second
year. This guy is so poised. The way he talks to the New York media, and you know what? He's so believable, it's not like they're going to get a zillion follow-up question from him either. You're just not going to do it. So I like the way that Robert Saleh has handled his business. I really, truly do. This guy is doing a remarkable job, not only with the media. And he told Zach Wilson, you know what? You got to be accountable. You have to mature is what you really have to do. And, you know, he said this isn't going to be his last game as a Jet. And I believe him. But he's going to put him in the right situation and try to get his head straight, got to get it right. In life, what you have to do is if you don't have your head straight, Bruce, you're not going to perform regardless of the job, whether it's in the media like we are or whether you're working for a bank or regardless of what the occupation are. You need to go in there and turn on the lights and keep the outside distractions to a minimal is what you have to do. Now, I saw Zach Wilson play when he was down here at the Boca Raton Bowl in shredded Central Florida. The guy does have a lot of great intangibles, but, you know, of course, I know to me that he had a great combine, but there's more to life than just having a great combine, and he just needs to sit and he's going to fight it as much as he can. But, again, the X factor here is Robert Saleh, the coach, and how he handles things, and we'll see where life goes. We could be talking about Zach Wilson a week from now. We never know.
Indeed. You know, I had an interesting thought too with the trade that killed the Denver franchise. With I think Russell Wilson got a 4-year contract. If he continues to play at Denver, you know, a potential Hall of Fame career is no longer a Hall of Fame career. I see that team going nowhere for the next few years. Go ahead.
Again, you're not a guy that's getting $250 million. Pete Carroll knew when to get rid of him, got a bunch of draft capital for it. So Carroll, Bill Belichick, they know when to get rid of these guys when they're on the downside. You know, we've had three things here today, which is pretty cool, actually. When I think about it, of trades that were made regarding draft capital, I'll even take it up this way if I can. All right. You've got the Seahawks getting a lot of draft capital for Russell Wilson on the downside of his career. You got the Texans who will ultimately swindle, to me, the Browns to the draft capital. The Detroit Lions got draft capital when they sent Stafford to the Rams, and they got draft choices. And the way the Rams are, last I had heard, they could be getting the third overall pick and then theirs. So it's all about draft capital, releasing some of these players at the right time. And to me,
yeah, let alone,
that's a factor you have to understand.
Yeah, let alone the fact Seattle got a serviceable tight end, or more than serviceable, and Noah Fant. That trade looks great. I see that, you know, Wilson probably, you know, what was, you know, I would consider somewhat of a Hall of Famish career is not going to go there in Denver. I think that that's a done deal. And I think they get squashed by Baltimore in Baltimore this week. They just don't look like their heart's in it, and they got a lousy coach.
Well, there you go. You just said it right. It's going to end up happening, Bruce. I'm glad you brought the coaching situation with Nathaniel Hackett. To me, the best thing that can happen is Nathaniel Hackett gets fired and Eric Bieniemy takes the job over in Denver, former University of Colorado running back. That's what they need. They need a guy that knows offense inside and out. You have a guy that coaches in the division, so you see him twice a year. And they only hired Hackett with the intent that they thought they could get Aaron Rodgers over there. We know how that worked out. It didn't. So, yeah, I mean, the Denver Broncos obviously have new ownership with the Walmart family is what they have. So the way I look at it is, yeah, I mean, Russell Wilson was a product of the Pete Carroll system, and now he's being exposed in Denver. And you know what? What you're going to see in this situation with Russell Wilson could be a new trend here based on how teams start paying these larger contracts to quarterbacks. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. It really will. But, I think Denver's they're in trouble. And, again, losing draft capital doesn't do a whole lot of good for a lot of things.
Right. First time anybody in the Walton family's overpaid anybody. And I think Bieniemy should have been the coach in New Orleans this year. It would have been a better fit. But, hey, I think Bieniemy should be a coach somewhere next year. That's a good suggestion. excuse me.
He would have been in New Orleans too, but the problem is that even if he was in New Orleans, he doesn't have a quarterback that he can really view as franchise. Jameis Winston and Andy Dalton, I wouldn't classify them as a top-tier tandem at all. You know, you thought that Jameis Winston got the situation squared away under Sean Payton, but I hear he's reverted back to his old ways. And Andy Dalton had a decent run out in Cincinnati, has moved around as a backup. So I think I don't think Eric Bieniemy was a miracle worker that New Orleans. They have to get the quarterback situation figured. When you think of all the quarterbacks that Denver has gone through since Manning, that's a lot. And they thought that Russell Wilson would be the guy that we could finally get to add stability. Well, it hasn't worked out well because, number one, they let Melvin Gordon go. The running attack, although he's fumbled a lot, I understand the justification for doing it. And they haven't been able to get Jerry and Judy involved. And the list of problems continues to go on and on is what you have.
True. When I was thinking about Bieniemy in New Orleans, it was more Jameis Winston than Andy Dalton. But like I say, he was shut down pretty quick. So I guess it wouldn't have worked out.
I agree. You're right. What New Orleans wanted to do is they tried to go ahead, Bruce, and have continuity there. That's what they wanted by bringing in Dennis Allen. Sometimes guys, they get a second chance, do pretty well. They do sometimes. And that's what New Orleans was banking on. But remember, Eric Bieniemy, to me, is not a miracle worker. He's done a tremendous job with the Chiefs, and he's due for an opportunity, this guy. He really is. So I don't know whether that opportunity in New Orleans would have been as good as most people perceived it to be. And I don't know what NFL jobs are going to be open this year. You know, I mean, when you start, well, here, look, if you want, real quick, why don't we just go ahead and look at all these openings here? Buffalo's not getting rid of their coach. Miami's not getting rid of their coach. The Jets aren't getting rid of their coach. You know, the Patriots aren't. John Harbaugh's all right. Zach Taylor's getting better. Kevin Stefanski's done a really good job. I'm going to go all of them real quick. Mike Tomlin's not going anywhere. I don't see him going anywhere.
No.
Now, obviously, Indianapolis Colts are an open job. Doug Peterson's done an outstanding job out in Jacksonville. What are they going to do with Lovie Smith, Texas? I don't know about that situation.
No.
Andy Reid's not going anywhere. I could potentially see an opening with the Chargers. I don't see the Raiders moving on from Josh McDaniels right away.
No, they paid him too much.
Right. So let's go to the NFC real quickly. There won't be a coaching change with the Philadelphia Eagles. I don't see McCarthy getting let go either. Brian Dable's good. Ron Rivera's not going anywhere. Kevin O'Connell's been a good fit there. Dan Campbell's fine. Matt LaFleur, So, and the Bears, you know, and so then you got the Buccaneers, Todd Bowles. They got a good young coach out with the Falcons. My gut feeling is that Steve Wilkes is going to get the full-time job with the Carolina Panthers, although that's still an open job. Dennis Allen,
yeah.
I don't see them giving up 1 year. Seattle Seahawks, you know they're not going to do anything
nope.
with Pete Carroll, but you could see a situation with the Arizona Cardinals where Cliff Kingsbury gets let go. And then the only thing about the Rams is if Sean McVay decides to step down. So I don't see more than 3-4 openings this offseason. That's just my prediction.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you totally on all of those. I just think that Denver situation is it's going to take years to repair. But yeah,
oh, yeah.
I want to see. What was that?
Yeah, a lot of Bruce, you're on target, man. That's why I think Eric Bieniemy needs to be the guy that they bring in once they let Hackett go. Here's the rule here, Bruce. Okay, if you can't go ahead and understand who you're facing two times a year, then somebody must be picking blind. I can tell you right now, Eric Bieniemy has been a problem for you in that division. Don't you think it would be as suitable? I thought he should have been hired last year in Denver. At some point or another, somebody's got to wise up and let him coach the Broncos. Yeah, that situation isn't very good, and neither is the Texans. I don't know what the Texans are going to do. I'm clueless there, except maybe draft a quarterback in the first round, and they just better hope they don't make a mistake on it again. So they're looking for, obviously, Watson's replacement is what they're looking to do. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's my – and Mark and I talked about that topic mainly on Monday night for Fire Up, and this is one of the things that we talked about was the dysfunction. They let David Culley go. If there's ever a coach that I've seen in the NFL get hosed, David Culley was it. You mean to tell me that Lovie Smith was a real major upgrade? No disrespect to Lovie, okay, but David Culley took that job with the intent that Deshaun Watson was going to be there, and then he found himself – in a very tough spot, managed to win 4 games with that group. So, go figure. It's really strange stuff.
Okay. What do you think about an interesting matchup this week, too? Also, Kansas City versus Cincinnati in Cincinnati. I'm kind of leaning toward the Bengals just with the recent past history. What do you think on that?
You know what? I predicted on a lot of my shows this weekend that I do believe the Bengals are going to beat Kansas City again. And here's the thing. Not only did they get them last year in the playoffs, but Joe Burrow's starting to play a lot better. Let's take a look at the Bengals for a moment, okay? The Cincinnati Bengals are 4-1 in the last 5 games. They've outscored their opponents by 285 to 231, and they're riding a 3-game winning streak. And what's crazy about it, Ja'Marr Chase is coming back. So, you know, the game is being played in Cincinnati. I'm going with the Bengals, and I like Joe Burrow. He's got that edge to him where, all right, I lost the Super Bowl last year, and he got a taste of it. And I could see Joe Burrow winding up there, if not this year, next year. And they got a great young coach with Zach Taylor, too. So I'm going Bengals, Bruce.
Yep, I'm with you on that one 100%. This has been a very unpredictable yet interesting football season for me. And I guess we can move on. You got some baseball stuff here. We have Jacob DeGrom going to the Texas Rangers. I didn't see what the size of the contract was on that yet because he gets hurt
I'll
a lot.
I'll tell you right now. You want to know? Here you go. You have to
go.
See it. I'll tell you. Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
The deal is worth $5 million, includes a conditional 6-year option that could take the contract to $222 million, according to Jeff Passan of ESPN. DeGrom Packer also reportedly includes a full no trade contract. So here's what you've got. Okay, I'll break down the particulars on this. Okay. 2023 is going to earn $30 million. 2024 is going to get $40 million. 2025 is going to get $40 million. 2026 is going to get $38 million. 2027, $37 million. And conditional option for 2028, but no guaranteed money. But here is the intangible fact about this contract, okay? He's going to Texas where there is no state income tax.
Uh-huh.
And it's death up in New York. So here's the thing. The reason why he didn't want nothing to do with the Mets, he's probably got sick and tired of playing up there anyways. He could have probably gotten the same money. But when you look at it and you put it in perspective, no state income tax. And there's another thing that you should be familiar with. And up in the Bay Area, they've hired Bruce Bochy as their manager. And we all know that Bruce Bochy is a heck of a manager. You know that too well in the Bay Area, right? So,
Well,
so you
I mean,
tell me what you think of that action about the size of the contract. You think I would have, don't you think you would have traded the Big Apple for Big D?
Sure, I would have. I didn't know. I knew Florida didn't have any state income tax, neither does Nevada. I didn't know the score with Texas. Thank you for informing me about that. I think DeGrom's a great pitcher.
DeGrom, if you ever want to leave the area, you could go to Texas and watch baseball. Really, right now it's been a little hard here that the Tampa Bay Rays don't have any money and the Marlins haven't been spending a lot either. We'll see if they ultimately do. With Kim Ng and then Skip Schumacher, Don Mattingly, I should point out, too, is now the new hit bench coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. Don did a great job here. So, you know, but there's no state income tax in the state of Florida. We get hit in other ways by going on the Florida Turnpike toll roads, but I have no problem paying those fees at all. And the reason why, as long as the roads are good and you don't have potholes, you don't kill tires. So, you know, they're a trade-off, but I'd rather have the no state income tax and deal with the roads, toll roads all day long. I've got zero problem with that at all. But no, I'd have made that move all day long. I really would.
Oh yeah,
not a big deal.
If I'm DeGrom gets hurt a lot though. You know, the Rangers are kind of mediocre, and their free agent signings of last year didn't work out like they wanted them to. Why not spend more money and see if you can do it that way? I don't know.
Well, Bruce, you had a bad manager last year, number one. They got rid of him. You brought in an experienced guy. So I really wouldn't worry about the free agent signing last year, knowing full well you got a brand-new start there. And then, of course, the Texas Rangers are a desperate team, haven't been in the postseason in 6 years. Why do you think the Cleveland Browns made the move for a Watson? Okay, if you do any hashtagging with this show, why don't you go out there and put desperate, because that would be a strong one when you tie the Cleveland Browns situation to the Texas Rangers. Desperate. That's what you're talking about. The Texas Rangers felt like they made a splash there. Now, why not? So we'll see. They could be even more active than they are up to the moment. They really could.
Yeah, and we also have Colton Wong going to Seattle. I don't know if that makes that much of a difference. He's a solid player. And everybody's thinking they're going to dethrone the Astros. I don't think so at this point. Although Seattle's an improving team, they got a lot of good young players. I'm trying to think of any others. Hasn't been any other free agent signings really that I can mention.
Bruce. The Mets are pivoting to Justin Verlander after the DeGrom signing with the Rangers. So, and I can see that as an interesting possibility because he would be reunited with his teammate Max Scherzer. So in terms of other potential moves, and we'll have more when we do this again next week, the Padres have legitimate interest in Trey Turner after two meetings. So I think Mark Mancini will definitely like that if the Padres go ahead and add him. So, you know, and again, we'll have more and more news, especially when the baseball winter meetings get going tomorrow, and a lot of your bigger moves actually occur during the baseball winter meetings for sure. So you'll see
all eyes on Aaron Judge. He stays with the Yankees. I think he's going to stay with the Yankees.
I think so too. But I'll tell you what, it's going to get expensive. If I were a betting man, if George Steinbrenner was there, I'd say 100%. But with his son running it, because he's more of a business person, I still give him 90-95%. You know, we've seen crazier things happen there. So, but ultimately, I think Judge stays with the Yankees. I do. I don't see him with the Mets.
Right. And so the Dodgers are not even making any kind of pitch to keep Trey Turner. Am I right?
Sounds like it. Right now, you got to remember, Bruce, they won 111 games. Did they win a World Series?
No, and that's what they were. That's what they were promising their constituency. So you're right there.
You should, right? So if you can't spend a lot, and you're not getting enough bang for your buck, then maybe you tool the roster a little bit and see what's what, because I think if Dave Roberts doesn't win a title next year or two, he could be gone anyways. I could easily see that. And one of the guys on one of my shows actually would love to see Mike Socia as manager of the Dodgers, which I could actually see down the road if Dave Roberts doesn't go ahead and get it out there.
Yeah.
Since you brought it up in the first place, you know, they trade Colt Wong in cash to the Mariners for outfielder Jesse Winker and infield Abraham Toro. Okay, so what the Mariners are getting is $1.75 million in cash. So evidently this is a trade that both those clubs, Brewers general manager Matt Arnold said that the clubs discussed a Wong trade for weeks, and there's a lot of teams that were interested in the second baseman. So let's just take a look at Wong's slash line. Spent the last two seasons with the Brewers with a slash line of .262 average. He's considered a gifted defender who will form a solid double combination with shortstop J.P. Crawford. The two-time Gold Glover will earn $10 million this season after the Brewers exercise the option for 2023. Meanwhile, you want to talk about a fresh start for Winkler? Last season, after the Mariners acquired him from the Cincinnati Reds, he's 29 years of age with a .219 average with 14 home runs, 53 RBIs, and 136 games. What's interesting, and now here's another thing, the one-time All-Star has performed well in American Family Field, although I call it Miller Park, throughout his career, with a slash line of .344 with 5 home runs and 14 RBIs. So here's the deal. Okay, he gets a fresh start, and he's going to go to Milwaukee. You would think his numbers show there. A little bit of info about Toro. Spent parts of two seasons with the Mariners after Seattle acquired him in a 2021 trade. With the Astros, some numbers here. He's 25 years of age, had 185 with 35 RBIs, 109 games. Really what you're looking for, well, here, let's continue on the Brewers. Been a busy offseason for the Brewers, who traded Hunter Renfro to the LA Angels and acquired right-hander Javi Guerra from the Tampa Bay Rays. And, of course, Milwaukee also lost Brent Suter on a waiver claim to the Colorado Rockies and declined right-hander, Brad Boxberger's 2023 option. So what you have right now is the Milwaukee Brewers, okay, hoping to get two guys that are looking for a change of scenery. And Wong, it'll be interesting. Is it a low-risk move? Yeah, a little bit, but you know what? You're going to have your high-profile moves, and then you're going to deal with markets that aren't very big that have to make the best and spend their money wisely. And we'll have to see whether fresh starts are going to work for both sides, making an ultimate win-win situation. That's what you're looking
at. Yeah, agreed.
You brought up the Wong trade. I wanted just to make sure that you had all the particulars and behind it.
And you've done a good job with that. Any other moves in baseball you think are coming?
No, not yet. Let's save some for next week, Bruce. I mean, you know, we've done a lot more things for this. We're making all these – we're talking about baseball before the winter meetings, okay? So maybe what we could do is, why don't you predict who's going to make the Hall of Fame tomorrow when they have one of the committees there. I know that Fred McGriff was long overdue. I think he could get in. I'm not sure about Don Mattingly. I don't think Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, I believe, are going to be talked about as well. So, and Curt Schilling, to me, is a hot topic of conversation. So why don't you just go ahead and make any predictions as to who will be going to Cooperstown next year, if anybody, with the Veterans Committee. And by the way, Marlins GM Kim Ng is actually on that committee, and Don Mattingly managed there. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes for Don, if he has an ally there, but he's going to need – I think they need at least 75% of the vote, which would be at least – you would need at least 12 or 16 to make the cut. So I like Fred McGriff, and I hope for Don Mattingly, and I hope that this committee sends a message to keep Bonds and Clemens out, and Curt Schilling has diarrhea of the mouth. We'll see whether or not that's enough to get him in. So, but Fred McGriff is, I think, a guy that I feel strongly will get in, long overdue. Lost a lot of games because of labor stoppages and things like that, and I hope Don Mattingly, but I would go with Fred McGriff at least on my end. What about you?
I agree with McGriff. And Mattingly was a good player for a long, long time. On the nice guy factor, I'd love to see both of those guys get in. And I agree with Kay, keeping out the steroid people, although – again, you know, when you put in David Ortiz and Fred Bud Selig, you kind of open the door to allow the steroid guys in. That's my opinion. The fact that Selig got in kind of disgusted me. That's about it. Yeah, I agree with you on. I think McGriff is long overdue, and Mattingly should get in. I mean, that was a good career.
Yeah, he was short. Also, I should put a rest in peace in here. 2-time Cy Young Award Gaylord Perry died at the age of 84. I know that's a pretty productive out with the Giants, and he went a lot of places. You want to talk about a guy who used that spitball as effectively as he did. Well, rest in peace, Gary. Gaylord Perry in the Hall of Fame. You know, you don't
He's got a statue. He's got a statue over at the park in SF. Yeah, he was fun growing up with Gaylord Perry. I must admit, all the rumors and stuff. That was a pitching staff that was like one pitcher short of making more World Series than they did in the '60s. And
The guy wrote a book. Yep. After the spitball, wrote a book about using the pitch. He died on Thursday. He died at his home at 5 a.m. due to natural causes. So, hey, more power to him. I didn't know he had a statue there, but then again, why should I be surprised? But here, I'll give you a record since I'm really big on stats. He had a career record of 314, 255, with 3,554 strikeouts and used a pitching style where he doctored baseballs or made batters believe he was doctoring them. So you want to talk about, in his autobiography, it was called Me and the Spitter. So, you know, he was the 11th man on the 11-man pitching staff for the Giants. And, you know, you want to talk about psychology, nobody did it better than Gaylord. So, once again, rest in peace, Gaylord. I'm glad they have a statue out there.
Indeed. And there was a lot of mention about how, you know, when a lot of the hitters thought he was throwing the spitter, he wouldn't throw the spitter. So, he played that psych game very well. You're right. And his brother wasn't half bad either. I think it's the second leading tandem of brothers that, as far as victories are concerned, him and Jim.
Well, yeah. Gary Gaylord Perry. Here's another little sidelight about Gary Lord Perry. After his career, Perry founded the baseball program at Limestone College in Gaffney and was its coach for the first 3 years. So I think those are things that a lot of people really don't know about. So he actually founded a baseball program. We all know what he did in the big league. So, you know, it's a heck of a player. I was at Cooperstown earlier in the year. And, of course, I saw all the things I needed to see. There was a great trip there. One of my highlights in 2022 was going to the Cooperstown and taking my wife there. She had never been there. We had an unbelievable time there. So, you know, so what's that? Tough week there losing him. You always lose tough people all year. One of my bigger losses this year was former Kansas City Royals pitcher Mark Littell, who was always on my shows a lot, was more than willing of his time. But Gaylord, what can I say? You know, to me, he comes to psychology. Nobody was better at it than him.
Indeed. Anyway, we're starting to get close to our time, Scott. Here, why don't you give them the lowdown on how to get in touch with you?
Thank you, Bruce. Once again, I'll enjoy working with you. You're the best. I really enjoy the time. I'm glad we're doing everything in terms of. Thank you. Well, you know, our website is www.southfloridatribune.com. My Twitter handle is at Tribune South. That's the @TRIBUNE South. But more importantly, please subscribe to the South Florida Tribune YouTube channel. South Florida Tribune YouTube channel. Please subscribe. There's no cost to do it. And then you'll be able to see all the shows I have, including one with Mark Mancini, which is called Fire Up. So, you know, South Florida Tribune YouTube channel, please subscribe. I enjoyed talking to everybody out there. We have a great base out here, and it's something I look forward to every week that we do it. It's been great.
Indeed. Thank you, Scott. And I will be, am available on holyroller 91978 @gmail.com. I can also be reached on Facebook. And again, another great show. Thank you very much, Scott, for your insight. And we look forward to next week. So long, everybody. Have a nice weekend.
Been a pleasure, Bruce. God bless you, to you and Mark Mancini. Enjoy being on this, man. Really great stuff.
Cheers.
Cheers.